Hi, this is Michael Roy, Executive Editor of the American Journal of Psychiatry. We're conducting a brief survey about this podcast, and we'd really appreciate hearing from you. To complete the survey, please go to ajp.psychiatryonline.org/audio and select the link at that page. Your answers will remain anonymous, and we thank you for your feedback. That's ajp.psychiatryonline.org/audio, and you'll see the survey link there. Again, you can complete the survey anonymously, and it won't take more than a few minutes. Now, on to this month's episode.
Welcome to the Audio Digest of the American Journal of Psychiatry. This is Dr. Susan Schultz with highlights for October 2017. They include a meta-analysis on the efficacy of psychodynamic therapy. We'll also feature a population study that found a protective effect of pregnancy on the risk for drug abuse, and a study of ovarian hormones in premenstrual dysphoric disorder looked at whether symptoms are due to steady levels above a given threshold or to an acute change in levels. We'll also report rates of mortality and self-harm in patients taking clozapine. And our clinical case conference describes how pharmacogenomic testing in psychiatry can be misleading. This article has been selected as meriting CME for readers who subscribe to the AJP CME course program. Each month, brief companion exams are created for three articles from the issue. By reading the articles and completing the online exam, individuals can earn up to one AMA PRA Category 1 credit per article. This activity is sponsored by the American Psychiatric Association. To subscribe, click on the CME link at the top of our homepage, ajp.psychiatryonline.org. We'll begin the highlights with our clinical case conference. Tahir Rahman and colleagues describe how pharmacogenetic testing can complicate treatment. They present the case of a young man with schizophrenia. He'd been treated with olanzapine, but several years later he had a severe exacerbation of psychosis. Numerous antipsychotics and mood stabilizers were tried, all without an adequate response. The treatment team concluded that a trial of clozapine would be the appropriate next step. However, the patient's outpatient psychiatrist ordered a pharmacogenetic analysis using a mail-order saliva test. The recommendations from the test predicted a poor response to clozapine based on the patient's genotype for the DRD2 gene, which codes for the dopamine 2 receptor. The company that did the genetic testing cited a small study that found a relationship between the DRD2 variation and treatment response in patients with first episode schizophrenia. For this reason, the family and outpatient psychiatrist were opposed to clozapine treatment. However, the case was reviewed with the hospital medical director, and a consensus was made to try clozapine, and the patient consented. He then improved rapidly. His family confirmed his progress, and he was gradually able to resume autonomous functioning. Pharmacogenomics is the study of how a person's genome affects his or her response to certain medications. It tries to identify genetic polymorphisms in or near the coding region of genes that encode protein structures a drug interacts with. Knowing the relationship between candidate gene variation and response to various drugs has potential. However, The clinical validity and utility of these antipsychotic panels remain unclear, and they haven't been standardized. Large clinical trials are needed to validate the strategy of selecting and dosing drugs based on genetic testing. Psychotherapy is our next topic. Psychodynamic therapy is frequently used, but it hasn't been determined clearly whether it's as beneficial as other treatments. Christiane Steinert and colleagues did a meta-analysis to test the equivalence of psychodynamic therapy with other treatments for particular disorders. 23 randomized controlled trials were included. Separate comparisons were done for depressive, anxiety, eating, substance, personality, and post-traumatic disorders. Each study used manual guided psychodynamic therapy in adults. To provide a rigorous test, psychodynamic therapy was compared with a treatment whose efficacy was already established for the particular diagnosis. Nearly all of the comparison conditions were other forms of psychotherapy. The primary outcome was the level of target symptoms in the particular disorder. To compare the two treatments in each study, the investigators set an equivalence margin, the minimum difference between groups that would be important enough to make the two groups non-equivalent. If the confidence interval was included in the specified equivalence interval, then the treatments were considered equivalent. This criterion was met, indicating that psychodynamic therapy was equivalent to the comparison conditions. Equivalence was found not only at post-treatment, but also at follow-up and across the diagnostic groups. Now we'll look at a positive side effect of pregnancy. Kenneth Kindler and colleagues verified that women with a record of drug abuse lowered their drug use during pregnancy and in the postpartum period. National data were examined for childbearing Swedish women who were born between 1980 and 1990. Drug abuse was determined from medical, criminal, and pharmacy registries. A cross-sectional analysis indicated a 60% reduction in drug abuse during pregnancy. Rates of drug abuse were also compared within subjects, comparing pregnancy with the time period immediately before it. This method showed a nearly 80% decline in the risk of drug abuse. Pregnancy was more protective in women with low parental education and those not living with a drug-abusing father of the child. The rate of drug abuse among cohabiting fathers was also lower during the partner's pregnancy, but not to the same degree as for mothers. The reduction in mothers' risk for drug abuse during pregnancy continued into the immediate postpartum period. During the first year postpartum, rates of drug abuse fell even lower. They then climbed gradually, and approximately 2 years after the birth, rates of drug abuse were similar to those observed during pregnancy. Our next article also relates to women, specifically those with premenstrual dysphoric disorder, PMDD. Symptoms are eliminated by ovarian suppression and stimulated by administration of ovarian steroids. However, symptoms appear with ovarian steroid levels that are indistinguishable from those in women without PMDD. So Peter Schmidt and colleagues wondered whether the symptoms are due to an acute change in ovarian steroid levels. They studied women with PMDD who were given leuprolide, a gonadotropin-releasing hormone agonist that induces ovarian suppression. After 2 or 3 months, 12 women had symptom remissions. Estradiol and progesterone were then added back. But before that, the women received a month of single-blind placebo. They then got 3 months of combined estradiol and progesterone. The primary outcome measures were self and observer scores on the rating for premenstrual tension. The scores didn't rise during the placebo add-back, but scores on both measures were significantly higher in the first month of combined estradiol and progesterone than in the last month of leuprolide. However, the scores then declined in the second and third months of hormone add-back. So the premenstrual symptoms were related to the change in estradiol and progesterone levels from low to high and not to consistently high levels. These findings have implications for the treatment of women with PMDD. First, a continuous exposure to hormones reminiscent of pregnancy could be an effective treatment for some women with PMDD. Studies using oral contraceptives have confirmed their efficacy in some women with PMDD. However, the current study indicates that continuous rather than interrupted oral contraceptive would be more effective. Our next topic is clozapine. Teresa Wimberly and colleagues examined mortality and self-harm in patients taking clozapine for treatment-resistant schizophrenia. They tracked a population cohort of patients over more than 12 years. The study cohort comprised all individuals who were born in Denmark since 1955 and had a diagnosis of schizophrenia and fulfilled criteria for treatment resistance. More than 2,000 patients were included. They were studied until death, the first episode of self-harm, emigration, or the end of the follow-up period in 2013. The data were obtained from Danish national registries. The overall rate of mortality was nearly twice as high for patients not receiving clozapine as for those who were taking it. This was driven mainly by periods when patients weren't receiving any antipsychotic at all. The mortality rate during treatment with other antipsychotics was also higher than with clozapine, but the difference wasn't significant. The strongest effect size was for suicide. Change in treatment was also important. The mortality rate was highest after clozapine discontinuation, especially within the first year after it was stopped. Non-lethal self-harm was also examined. In this case, the rate was lower for patients taking clozapine than for those taking non-clozapine antipsychotics. There was no significant difference between clozapine and no treatment. This concludes our audio highlights of the October issue of the American Journal of Psychiatry. Please visit our website, ajp.psychiatryonline.org, for the complete versions of these and other articles. We also welcome comments. They can be emailed to ajp@psychpsych.org. Our next month topics will include the value of clinical genetic testing in psychiatry, lithium and divalproex treatment for mania in older adults with bipolar disorder, and the clinical course of psychotic disorders over 20 years. We hope you'll join us. Thank you for listening.